Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
This is Movers and Shakers, where we interview the upcoming generation of Make It Happen multifamily investors to share their story.
Welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gito, multifamily investor, educator, father, mentor, and I am joined back on the show. Missed him last week, Joshua Ryan Rusin. Josh, how are you doing today?
Gino, man, you know, I'm gearing up for Multifamily Mastery 4. It's really exciting to get that many people together that are like-minded investing in multifamily and really to bring some of the brightest minds in there. And at this conference, I'm excited to learn a lot. I'm excited for the networking and always to sharpen the sword. What's going on in your world, Gino?
Josh, every day is a new day. I'm playing with house money, as they say. It's been an exciting year for us as far as launching books, as far as doing MM4, the internal boot camps. We just came off a money mixer a couple of weeks ago in Omaha. Big shout out to Chris again and Colin Schwartz for hosting us there. The students learned a ton out there. I just love meeting with the students. So it's been a good year, Josh. No complaints.
Love it, man. Love, love, love celebrating the wins. And speaking of the wins, we had a really awesome Jake and Gino student on today's Movers and Shakers podcast. We have Karthik Mulpuri. Karthik is the managing partner of Sixth Sense Equity. Sixth Sense Equity is a general partner in two multifamily properties totaling 74 units in Hampton, Virginia, and Columbia, Tennessee, and four mobile home parks across the Southeast, totaling 528 units. The firm also holds limited partner stakes in an institutional multifamily asset in the Dallas MSA and an industrial asset focused on the cannabis space in Michigan. The firm's core focus is value add B and Class C properties in Virginia and the Carolinas. In his W-2, Karthik has been a finance and operations executive at technology-focused companies ranging from early stage to public. He was previously a venture capitalist and an investment banker. Over his career, Karthik has worked on 25-plus M&A and capital-raising transactions, totaling nearly $2 billion in aggregate deal volume. Holy moly, Karthik. I feel like you've lived like three lives at your age, man. Give me your whole story. Let's start unpacking that. You at a young age, kind of where you went from there, why real estate, all of it.
Yeah, guys. So, you know, you mentioned it. Started my career in investment banking, venture capital, and, you know, investment banking was in the Bay Area. So I've lived at the intersection of technology and finance my entire career. And it's been, you know, fun ride watching how the tech industry has grown, you know, the past 10 plus years. And, you know, from investment banking, venture capital, you know, went to, you know, work at a number of startups the past 6+ years. So early stage, mid stage, late stage, and public, and got to sit in a number of different roles at these companies, got to, you know, work on a number of different things from capital raising to launching joint ventures in, you know, the Middle East and Japan to selling companies. To, you know, running, but you know, to managing budgets and, you know, managing on a tight budget. So it's been a fun ride. You know, with real estate, I started getting into it around 2016, 2017. What I realized was that, you know, with tech, you know, especially when you're working at a startup, it's really a boom or bust proposition, right? When it comes to the value of your equity. You know, if it's a boom, you know, I think what we're seeing what the outcome is, given how, you know, tech IPOs have been doing in the public markets. But, you know, when it's a bust situation, you know, your equity is worth nothing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I realized, you know, early on that, you know, I can't depend entirely on that. And I had to, you know, look for, you know, other sources of, you know, passive income. And so, you know, I was thinking through, you know, how to best get involved in real estate around that time, realized that, you know, what made the most sense for me, you know, at the time I was living in New York, you know, my hours were pretty nutty, was to get involved as an LP in the multifamily space. And so I found an operator, you know, really liked, you know, his philosophy, you know, the markets he was focused on. And so I invested with him back in 2018. And then, you know, fast forward to 2020, you know, COVID hits, you know, I moved back to where I grew up in Northern Virginia. And I decided that this was the perfect time to get more active in the space. You know, I had been thinking about it, you know, I'd sent an offer to without, you know, knowing a lot about how to operate a multifamily asset at the time. I'm kind of thankful that, you know, those offers did not get accepted. And so, you know, went through and, you know, tried to understand the different mentorship programs out there and came across you guys, you know, loved your philosophy, loved your messaging, and loved the comprehensive nature of your program. The fact that, you know, you guys, in addition to, being the asset managers, have your own property management company, you guys are vertically integrated. And so I thought that I'd learned the most from, learning from you guys. And so that's how I jumped into this space. I think the education, that you guys have provided is important, especially the fact that you guys had in-person education, you know, during the pandemic. I think that was huge for my development, getting to see, for example, on, on-site tours that, you took us on when we went to Knoxville to see your properties, how you manage your properties, how you guys, renovated units to maximize value in your properties, and so on and so on. And then also getting access to a community of like-minded individuals was key. And that's ultimately how I found my partners for my first deal, which was a 42-unit acquisition that we closed in Hampton, Virginia this past summer.
So Josh, it's safe to say that Karthik is the smartest individual on this call right now. Okay, so safe to say that. Karthik, let's dive into those deals before you join Jake and Gino, because that's the pain point. Because a lot of students, when they join, their first idea is, I want deal flow. Let me find deals. And I always push back and I always say, time out. What is a deal to you, number one? How do you analyze a deal? What are you looking for in a deal? What's your exit strategy? And the list goes on and on and on. There's a lot of things you need to prepare for when you're getting to any kind of endeavor, especially multifamily. Why did you say, thank God I didn't get into those deals? Now looking back, now with all the experience and education and knowledge you have, what was wrong with those deals that you were looking at?
Yeah, so I remember bidding on a 60 unit in Richmond. I think this is back in, December or January of 2020, right before I knew much about, how to manage a multifamily asset day to day. But looking back at the deal itself, it wasn't in the best part of town. So I think it was a Class C asset in a Class C area. On top of that, they were all one bedroom apartments. Right. And, what I learned from you guys as an example is, you want to focus on a unit mix where, you're looking at mostly two bed apartments on up. And the reason why is, your unit economics are better, right? Those tenants tend to stay around longer. And so when they stay around longer, you're dealing with less vacancy in theory. And then on top of that, these tenants by staying around longer, they might be more open to rental increases, right? So your profits are ultimately up because, your revenues go up over a time frame, plus your expenses are less ultimately.
And then, so what other, other pain points or frustrations did you have before joining Jake and Gino?
I'd gotten, bit, comfortable with, the underwriting piece, right? Because that's where my skill set comes from, right? As, former CFO, having sat in finance roles, but I just did not have any idea to, how to actually manage an asset, right? And stepping back from that, how to choose the right property management company to work with. And so I kind of learned that, right? From, working with you guys. Like end to end, right? So that initial phase, seeing how, the RAND team manages a property, right? I want to work with a property management company that's going to manage, properties that I acquired to a similar standard. And so seeing that, showed me what good really means.
Love that. And when you did join, you find your partners on the platform. I know that first deal, I remember being at an event and you called me on a Friday before that deal. Let's talk about that deal, because there was a lot of moving parts there. Scary. Yep. Are we going to close? Are we going to extend due diligence? Walk us through that first deal. How did you find the deal? How did you find your partners and how did you put that deal together?
Yeah. So I first came across a deal in October of 2020. At that time, I was going to, in the in-person events, was reaching out to a number of members in the community, and then, just jived with, a number of them and realized that, I had shared, similar philosophy with a few of them. And so, through one of the folks in the community, I got introduced to my partner, a guy named, Keith, who's based in, the Hampton Roads. And, you know, at the time, you know, he owned, you know, about 50 multifamily doors, had made the transition from single family to multifamily. And the properties he'd taken over, you know, he was getting great results out of, right? And he had a shared philosophy that, you know, I did as well. And so, you know, he and I started to, you know, look at deals together around, you know, June, July. You know, I think it was around September, you know, we were just comparing notes on, you know, did we reach out to all the brokers in our market, realized that there was one firm that we had not reached out to. Keith had known a couple of the brokers that worked there, you know, for a while. One guy shifted from property management to the broker side. And so it helped to have some credibility going into the conversation with them. Mm-hmm. And when we spoke with them, they sent us an off-market deal, you know, 42 unit, two bed, 1.5 bath townhomes in the city of Hampton. And so, you know, we jumped on it right away. You know, we underwrote the deal and, you know, we presented an offer. That offer was turned down at the time. It was deemed to be too low. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason why, you know, we went conservative on our offer, you know, is a few things, right? So one, you know, this being my first deal, you know, I was going to take a naturally conservative approach to my underwriting, right? Mm-hmm. Try to figure out, hey, what are all the things that can go wrong? Let me bake those into my underwriting, right? Uh-huh. And so that's going to result in a lower valuation. And that's something that new students will overcome, right? With more and more experience, mm-hmm. To figure out, you know, where you can get confident with your underwriting. So that was one piece of it. The second piece of it was the property itself. You know, this property struggled through COVID. It had, you know, a number of tenants who had not paid rent in months. And due to the eviction moratorium at the time, you know, it was tough to get them out. Along with that, you know, the seller was an institutional firm that was based in Maryland. They had a property management company that they were working with that was a venture-backed company that had just expanded to the market. So they didn't really understand the market, mm-hmm. and all the intricacies of it. And so, you know, actually during the process, you know, we had educated their property management company that there were rent relief programs available in Virginia that they ultimately start to seek, you know, relief for. Uh-huh. But, you know, back to the deal itself, you know, after, you know, three rounds of offers, you know, finally got it under contract in January of this year. And, you know, we, you know, negotiated the PSA, got on site to do diligence, I want to say late February, early March. And once we got on site, you know, we realized that there was more deferred maintenance in the interiors than we had budgeted for. Mm-hmm. On top of that, the number of units that had been renovated by the seller, that was misrepresented to us.
No, so they never do that, do they? Okay.
And so, you know, working with, you know, the coaches in the Jake and Gina community, right? You know, you don't want to retrade if you don't have to. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have, you know, justifiable grounds to negotiate retrade. And so mm-hmm. working with the coaches, you know, we were able to figure out, hey, what is justifiable for us to go back to the seller and, you know, their agent with what we want to credit for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those negotiations took, you know, a good month or two, you know, because, you know, the seller, you know, was going to take a bath on this property, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of, you know, where the credit was going to come out. But, you know, they wanted to minimize the loss that they were going to take. Mm-hmm. But we were able to figure something out with them in, you know, late March, early April. That was advantageous to us. And this is a process where, you know, when we were negotiating a credit, you know, we saw the collections issues that, you know, the seller continued to have. The operational issues they continue to have. And so we realized that we had the upper hand in negotiations with them. And so mm-hmm. we stuck with our guns, mm-hmm. you know, when it came to, you know, holding firm on what we wanted. We did, you know, make some concessions here and there, but, you know, we got most of what we wanted. And so, you know, we get to April. So, you know, we move forward with our lender, who we kind of had on pause, right? Because we weren't 100% sure whether we're going to move forward with the deal or not. So, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't want to give our non-refundable deposit without having the confidence to do so. And so, you know, we work forward with the lender, sign a term sheet, great terms, you know, and at the time, you know, given the deal size, you know, this is a $3 million deal roughly, you know, we decided the best route to go with was a community bank. And you know, that was another case where, you know, I got that learning from being a part of the community, because, you know, you guys were stressing, you know, during, you know, that during COVID, you know, the bridge market was frozen. This deal was too small for bridge anyway. And then this deal wouldn't have qualified for agency. So the best route was to go with the community bank. And we found one that believed in the property. You know, the terms we got were an ADLTV, 3.65% interest rate, 30-year AM, you know, 12 months of IO. So great terms in the grand scheme of things. And really helped to, you know, take up, you know, pro forma returns higher than we had, you know, otherwise modeled for, which was, which was excellent. But anyway, you know, they take the, you know, we move forward on the loan. You know, they move forward on getting an appraisal done. And the appraiser ends up doing the appraisal on an as-is basis versus an as-completed basis. So they didn't factor for the heavy seller credit that, you know, we were scheduled to get with the closing of the transaction. And so due to that, you know, the appraisal coming in lower, you know, over a course of a week, we had to renegotiate the deal with the seller. And, you know, this renegotiation went a lot faster than the earlier negotiation of the credit. We were able to figure out a new structure of the deal. So lower overall deal price, but less of a credit, which was fine because we would just go and raise the extra capital. And their, you know, returns ended up being better for us, right, under this revised structure. And so the loan gets approved. You know, we work toward closing. It's you know, May you know, of this year. And you know, the bank you know, ends up moving slowly, right? So we learned you know, afterward that you know, the loan officer was going to resign at the end of the month, and then the loan closer was going to resign at the end of the month. And so, you know, they were trying to push it through, but they didn't have full incentive, right, to, you know, get this done in a timely manner. And so when I called you, I think it was June of this year, and, you know, we had formally gotten out of the diligence period, you know, our finance, you know, the timeline for financing was up. So we were, you know, technically in default of the PSA, and the seller could have seized their deposit, which is a scary situation to be in. But, you know, ultimately, you know, the seller realized like, hey, if I restart the process all over again, my problems are not going to go away. And so they decided against taking our deposit. You know, we had to, you know, make some concessions at the tail end of the deal to get it done, you know, give up, you know, some of the bad debt reserves that we had negotiated for and to release a piece of our deposit. But ultimately, you know, because this is a bank that my partner had worked with before, he was able to get on the phone with an executive there. That executive was able to, you know, push folks internally to ultimately close the deal a few days later.
Love that. Let me ask you one quick question about the deal. Would you have been able to close the deal without the mentorship, without the coaching?
I don't think so. I don't think so. At least not in the manner that we closed it in.
As far as I remember getting on that call and just the little tips that you get, the little tricks that you get, the ability to get some concessions, some retrading, because you could have blown up the deal in the beginning and retraded way too much and they could have gotten insulted. But the fact that you know how much to retrade and what to retrade, I mean, that's an amazing tip that you get from those coaches and from people who've done the deal.
Yeah. Karthik, I want to dive into more things. I mean, one, the rent growth of that market in Hampton and how rents were under market. And then also some of the operational fat that you saw in that deal as well.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting, right? Because when we analyze markets, you know, we're looking at generally, at, you know, how markets like Charlotte, Tampa, and other hot markets are growing, right? So, you know, we want to see, you know, insane population growth, you know, really high income growth, you know, all your usual things, right? And you know, as a result, you know, those markets, you know, like the multiples that properties traded out there, right, you've got really compressed cap rates. And so, you know, some folks can really make it work out there. Some folks are really doing well. But what we realized with the Hampton Roads as a whole, and, you know, guys, the Hampton Roads is kind of a coalition of sorts of seven different cities. So you've got, you know, Norfolk, Virginia Beach, the city of Hampton, Portsmouth, Suffolk, and Chesapeake. You know, it is the military center of the U.S., right? It's the Navy's East Coast. It's where the Navy's East Coast operations are essentially headquartered. You know, the Air Force, NATO, and a bunch of other organizations have large presences out there. So it's never going to be the sexiest market in terms of rent growth and in terms of population growth. But, you know, it is one that's, you know, going to be steady. It's not going to go anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Just given the concentration of government jobs out there. In addition to that, you know, you've got, you know, four Fortune 500 companies based out there, and you have a number of academic institutions, including William & Mary and Old Dominion University, and Hampton University out there as well. What happened during the pandemic with the city of Hampton was, you know, it was one of the fastest markets to recover from COVID. And I think part of that was due to the presence of government jobs. So jobs mm-hmm. came back to that market sooner than it did to the economy as a whole. And so in 2020, the rent growth was in the double digits in Hampton. Right. So that was one thing that excited us about the market, you know, and in our based on underwriting. It ended up turning out that, you know, the rents that we had projected to get were $100 lower than what we are getting now from tenants, you know, that are moving into renovated units. And that rent growth has continued this year. And per CoStar, it's going to continue at, you know, at least a mid to high single digits clip next year as well. So that was one of the things that was, you know, really attractive about the market.
Last question before we go to the short answer questions. You've raised capital. You've done a lot of deals. You have any tips on raising capital for multifamily?
Yeah. So, you know, I know we're going to get into it later, but, you know, one of the books that I recommend that folks read is, you know, at the end of the day, it's anything that's written by Oren Klaff. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, a couple points to make, you know, on that front. I think the numbers matter, but I think the story, you know, the numbers should not overshadow the story. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you're raising capital from investors, you know, you want to, you know, put the emphasis on the story. Second, you know, you don't want to put out, you know, 50 to 60 slide deck, right? That's mm-hmm. going to confuse a lot of people, especially when it's loaded with numbers. Mm-hmm. So you want to get, you know, to the point, and you want to get, you know, you want to present a deck that you can review with an investor over, say, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, right? Because that's the attention span that you're going to have, you know, when you work with investors. And, you know, on top of that, right, when it's a non-obvious market that, you know, you're, you know, pitching to an investor to enter, you want to, you know, communicate, you know, why they should care about that market, right? And so you want to figure out, you know, what are the real highlights of that market that are not obvious from, say, just Googling around for, you know, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Hit me up, everybody. GinoJakeandGino.com. Got a little ebook, How to Share the Benefits of Multifamily Investing and Creating Capital. And before we go to the short answers, just a couple other things. I totally believe that Oren Klaff, we've done two podcasts with him. Go to the Jake and Gino channel, check them out. He talks about the neocortex brain and the croc brain. You're pitching to somebody's croc brain. Make it easy, make it understandable, make it different, make it exciting. So then you can go through their primitive croc brain. And then the neocortex is the analysis. That's where a car thief probably loves to live, with the underwriting of the numbers. But if you start leading with 8% pref and waterfalls and CapEx and due diligence, they're going to shut you down right away. So go to the Jake and Gino channel, listen to those two podcasts we've done with Oren Klaff. I love that. That is an excellent recommendation. So go over there and check it out. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Gino, I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to take their multifamily investing business to the next level. I know that you've been hard at work helping Jake and Gino students do just that using our framework. Can you explain to the listeners how they can get our help?
Guys, we've been hard at work growing our community of like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been nothing short of incredible. We're looking to grow this amazing group. What we're looking for is those who want to follow our proprietary framework that we've created: buy right, manage right, and finance right. Leverage our connections, education, and mentorship as ways to take your business to the next level.
So if you're interested in finding out more about how you can become a part of our amazing community, apply to work with us at jakeandgino.com/apply.
All right, Karthik, I got some short answer questions here for you. I know you mentioned Oren Klaff's book, Pitch Anything, but what's your top favorite book and why?
Yeah, so I don't have a favorite book per se, but like a category that I'll point to is biographies. And I really like reading biographies, whether, you know, it's Surely You're Joking by, you know, Richard Feynman, you know, the famous, you know, physicist, you know, of who was around during World War II and, you know, helped to develop the, you know, the atomic bomb, or, you know, whether it's, you know, something like Green Lights, right, by Matthew McConaughey. Because, you know, with biographies, you get to live in the heads of, you know, great minds. And, you know, you get to see, you know, how they reacted to challenging situations that came their way, and kind of like how they proceeded, you know, through life as a whole. And so from that, you know, from those stories, I feel, you know, you end up gleaning a lot of lessons that you can end up using for your own life and, you know, for challenging situations you come across as well.
Love that. Love, love, love that. I agree with you 100%, right? If you can take someone else's story, learn from their mistakes and kind of their shortcuts, and then you can advance in that very quickly. So that's awesome. What about best habit for success? Clearly, you've created a lot of success in a lot of different industries. You know, what's helped you do that?
Yeah, so I would say it's networking. It's getting to know folks who are, you know, experts in your space. And I think that was one of the things that I really benefited from joining, you know, this community, you know, folks that, you know, had done it before, had come across, you know, challenging situations, because you want to have an advisory board of folks that you can go to when something comes along, right? And so that was something that benefited me in the past as well. You know, there was a company that I was, you know, the CFO of that, you know, we were going through an M&A process for. And, you know, as, you know, challenging things were coming up in the process, you know, I had an advisory board of other CFOs to reach out to figure out, you know, how to navigate that, right? And that was a difficult transaction that we were able to get over the finish line as well. So, you know, I would say networking and, you know, essentially building up an advisory board of folks that you can rely on to, you know, help brainstorm creative solutions and the right solutions for challenging things you're facing, I think is key.
Man, that's awesome. I like that. You know, measure twice, cut once, right? And double check all the work. So, okay. So guys, I think this has been a killer episode. Karthik, you're an absolute stud, man. And your intelligence absolutely shines through this. And I think, you know, it's like you said, it's literally just ripping off and duplicating, find people who are doing what you want, taking those lessons from it, networking and making them your peers. And then next thing you know, you become one of them. Gino, what do you got to add to the summary on this?
So Karthik starts out in investment banking in New York. Pandemic hits. He moves back to Virginia, and I think he's seeking his big why, and it's either boom or bust. You either make a ton of money and have equity, or you bust. And he finds multifamily, and I think he looks at it from a different lens. When you're first starting out, you're not sure how to analyze these deals. He did the right decision of taking action. He at least invested in an LP deal. That's the first step, learning the process, learning if it's right for you and figuring out if that's the right sponsor. Then to take it to the next level, Karthik just decided to join a mentorship program. He became part of the Jake and Gino community. That's where he started the networking, dove into education more, came to a couple of boot camps, did a Manage Right. He met his partners on the platform. And then all of a sudden, in the beginning of this 2021, he finds a deal. They take a deal in the contract. And I just hope everyone listens to the struggle and the pain and the ultimate triumph that occurred. It's over a 6-month process, but he's poised right now to take that 40 unit deal to the next level where he's got rent growth. And everyone's going to turn and say, man, that Karthik was a lucky guy. He got into his 40 unit deal, but they don't know the story of getting into the deal and the struggle and the business plan and the ability to go back and retrade and do all that work. There's a lot of work that goes into this, but you can see what the end result is. If you're willing to, you know, take that education, add it with action, education times action, you will get those results. So I just want to thank Karthik for being on the show today. And Karthik, where can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah. So you can visit my website at sixthsenseequity.com. You can email me at Karthik@sixthsenseequity.com, or you can reach out to me on LinkedIn.
All right. Josh, final words?
Listen, Karthik, again, yeah, I want to thank you for being an amazing guest and sharing your story. Really grateful to call you a friend and super excited to see you at hopefully MM4, man.
Yeah, I will be there. Looking forward to meeting all the folks I haven't met yet, you know, reuniting with old friends and seeing you guys down there.
Sounds great. Thanks, Josh.
Take care,
thanks,
everybody. Karthik.
Take care, everyone. Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.